All right. Today is week 5 of 6 weeks of Guardrails, and I hope you guys have enjoyed this series. I hope this has been impactful. I hope it's been helpful to you guys. I had one young man tell me after last week's message, he said, "Chris, I've loved/hated this series." And I said, "Oh, that actually sounds about right." He said, "I said, well, why do you love it?" He goes, "Well, there's been a lot of helpful stuff, a lot of practical stuff, a lot of really wise stuff." And I said, "Well, that's good. Why do you hate it?" He goes, "Well, because now that I know it, I feel accountable to all of it." And so I said, "Well, that's good. That's what we should feel." And so, if you're new with us here, if you're kind of jumping in towards the end of the series today, the idea of guardrails is simply this: we're saying that in our lives, much like on the open road, there are areas where there's danger. There's areas where there's possible danger. There's areas where there's a lot of good on one side of the road, or when we stay on the road, but there's danger when we start to veer off the road. And in our lives, we've been saying that those areas exist within our personal lives too. And so, in areas like our sexuality, in areas where of our friendships, in areas of alcohol, in areas of our time, we've been saying because there's potential for good, because there's potential for bad, we need some guardrails. We need some things that keep us from straying into areas that we don't have any business being in. And so we've used this definition, this simple definition, as we've gone through this series, that a guardrail is a personal standard of behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. It's personal because you'll have some that I won't have, and you'll need some that I won't need, and I'll need some that you won't need. So it's a personal thing. It's a standard of behavior because we decide now, not in the moment of temptation, or now, not in the motion, in the moment when things get emotional. We have a personal standard of behavior. I've decided this is what I will do, this is what I won't do, this is how far I will go, and this is how far I won't go. And it's a matter of conscience because we don't want to wait until we're skidding off the road and going down a hillside for us to go, "Oh no." We want to go, "Oh no," when we start moving in a direction where there's danger. And so it's a personal standard of behavior that becomes a matter of conscience. And so we've talked about it in the area of friendships and the most important areas of our relationships of our lives. We've talked about it in relation to alcohol, talked about it in relation to sex, and last week talked about it in relation to time. And today, just because we want to make sure that, you know, we finish off this series talking about everything possibly that's uncomfortable, today we're going to talk about money. Would you guys say money? Yeah, we're going to talk today about money. We're going to talk about money, money, money. You know, more money, more problems, right, Stanley? You know, like all that kind of stuff that we're going to talk today about money. And again, you know, in case talking about sex 2 weeks ago didn't make you uncomfortable enough, we figured why not talk about money today? There's in my house, like Thanksgiving or like holidays, there was a few things you didn't talk about. You didn't talk about religion, you didn't talk about money, and you didn't talk about politics. So you know, we're going to talk about, in a religious setting, we're going to talk about money, and then somehow maybe it'll connect to politics. I don't know. Anyway, but like, we're going to talk about everything that you're not supposed to talk about. But today, just to kind of get started, I want to let you know there's two reasons I think it's really important to talk about money. And the first is really just a me thing, although I think a lot of you might agree with this. The first reason, what I say is kind of just a me thing, is I think that outside of people getting right with God, I don't think there's anything that's more life-changing than getting right with money. Does that make sense? That, I mean, like I, as a pastor, as a person, I believe like the most important decision we can make is, am I going to accept Jesus as my Savior, as my Lord? Like, getting right with God is the most important thing that you can do in your life. It's the most life-changing thing you can do. Outside of that, though, getting right with money, or getting started right with money, or making ourselves right with money after we got it wrong in the first place, getting right with money is one of the most life-changing things that we can do. I actually believe this so much. I mean, we started this church almost 3 years ago now, which is crazy to think about. But before that, I was a youth pastor for 8 years in Alamogordo. And before that, I was a part-time youth pastor in Minneapolis. And everywhere that I've been as a youth pastor, wherever I worked as a youth pastor, I mean, working with middle school students, high school students, sixth graders to 12th graders, you know, who, by the way, you know, they think they have absolutely no money, and most of the time they're right. But as a youth pastor, I felt like this was so important that I wanted my students to have a good foundation of what God thinks about how we should handle our money, that every year I would spend at least one message out of our, you know, 46 weeks a year, I would send one message just saying like, "Look, I know you might think this is ridiculous. I know you think this might not be something you need to worry about for a long time. I want you to know what God thinks about how you're supposed to handle your money." And I took it so far. 1 year we actually created a 4-week small group where we watched through. We said like, "Hey, in the middle of the week on a Wednesday night, for 4 weeks in a row, we're gonna watch Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University stuff." again, I mean, to middle and high school students, we said, like, look, if you guys want to, like, whoever wants to do this, I think this is incredibly valuable. Come on out on these Wednesday nights. And I was, like, the first night, I mean, we had a large youth group. Our high school youth group was, like, 130 students. And it was like a big, you know, big youth ministry. And I was like, okay, we'll probably have, like, 20 students show up. And five did. And I was like, okay. Well, for those five students, they showed up every week for four weeks. And I got to tell you, like, to this day, I still get cards. I still get messages almost on a yearly basis. So, like, these guys will text me, will send me cards saying, like, hey, we just wanted to, again, say thank you, because those talks, they helped us get the right foundation when it came to money. And they'd say, like, I think we're doing well with money today. And part of it goes back to those things that you exposed us to. And I kind of think to myself, like, if you're doing so well with money, don't send a card. Send a check, you know, like that. Like, that's kind of my, you know, my thought. But I just believe that, like, you know, for a long time, with, you know, to high school students and middle school students who had no money to give, and it didn't affect our budget at all, and it didn't affect our church offerings at all. Like, I just really believe that it's so important to get started right, or to start over right, or to get ourselves right when it comes to money, to handle our money the way God would have us handle our money. I think if God created us and if God created money, I think there's a purpose for both, and I think God knows best how to handle. So that's kind of my personal, like, why I believe in this so much. The second reason is really kind of connects to, like, what I do as a pastor. I think many of you, you'll understand what I'm saying with this, is that, like, when someone wants to talk to the pastor, you guys know, like, as a pastor, there's like, hey, I want to talk to you. Can I get some time to talk to you? If there's something that's, like, too big to talk about with anyone else and they have to talk to the pastor about it, I generally know it's going to be in one of two areas. It's either going to be sex or money, right? So, like, if someone comes up and they're looking a little bit like, hey, I got to talk to you about something serious. I'm like, okay, which one is it, sex or money? We kind of covered the sex stuff 2 weeks ago, but it's sex or money. If it's a high school boy, I'm like, it's sex. But if it's like a grown up adult, I'm like, which one? I can't tell for sure. You know, like, is it sex or money? And so, when it's sex, again, we talked about what happens, you know, when we get stuff wrong with sex a couple weeks ago. But when it comes to money, I mean, it sounds like this. It sounds like a husband coming in and saying, look, I don't know how to talk about this, but I just found out that my wife has had, like, a secret bank account, and she's had a bunch of credit cards that I didn't know about, and she's maxed them all out, and I didn't know about this, and I didn't know about this, and I say, like, well, how did you not know? And they say, I don't know, I don't pay attention to things. I'm like, well, that sounds right. And so, like, you say things like, you know, and it causes incredible pain, it causes incredible hurt. It's this mistrust, or it sounds like a wife who says, like, look, I don't know how to talk to my husband about this. My husband has an online shopping addiction, and you're thinking, like, male shopping addiction? Yeah, we don't buy small little things. We buy big old things. We buy boats, okay? And so they're like, you know, my husband has this online shopping addiction. He keeps buying things that we don't need to impress people that we don't like. Every single day we have four Amazon boxes on our front doorstep, and we've got this and this and this. But the thing we also have is we have a whole lot of debt, and I don't know how to talk to him about it. So how do we deal with that? Or it sounds like, hey, we wanted to give our kids everything, and we gave our kids everything, but now we're going to actually have to give our kids a bill because we spent and spent and spent and spent on things that we couldn't afford. And so now we have all the things that our kids want, but we can't actually have any time. We don't have any time to spend with our kids because we have to work overtime to pay off those bills. I mean, like, money is one of those areas that if we get it wrong, we get it wrong in a lot of ways. And it's one of those things that if we get it wrong, it hurts us. It hurts us deeply. It hurts our heart. It hurts our minds. It affects so many different areas of our lives. I mean, so today, the reason I want to talk about this is simply this. I believe, and what you kind of already know is this, that there is a direct connection between our heart and our money. I mean, think of the times in your life when money was not good. How was your heart? Chances are your heart was a little bit full of worry. Your heart may have been a little full of anxiety. You might have been like, hey, you know, money's tight. I have a tough time seeing anything good. And think of the times where money has been good in your life. You're like, wow, like, life is great. There is a direct connection between our heart and our money. There's a direct connection between our heart and our finances. When you think about this, how we spend money, it reveals what we most value in life. I mean, I've heard pastors say it, I've heard Dave Ramsey say it, like, look, show me your checkbook and I'll show you what you care about most. And you might think, well, I don't keep a checkbook. I have an online bank statement. Okay, well, show me your online bank statement. I'll show you what you care about most. It might be Starbucks. It might be Chick-fil-A. It might be your home. It might be your car. It might be your kids. But whatever you spend the most on, it reveals what your heart is most connected to. How we use money reveals what we have placed our trust in, that we either place our trust in people or in our home or in our job or in however we spend money, however we use money, it reveals what we've placed our trust in. Where your money goes, there your attention goes. We were talking about this in Growth Track a week ago. If you've ever invested money in a thing that had like a stock ticker, like say it was like, you know, AXE, Axe, it was body spray, right? So you invested in Axe body spray because you thought like, well, what's better to invest in than covering up teenage boy smell? Because teenage boys will always smell. They will always need Axe body spray. And so let's invest in Axe. So you invested in AXE and you invested, let's say $400 in AXE. Until you take that investment out, until you remove the money, guess what your heart is really, really tied to? AXE. You're tied to Axe. You're tied to body spray. You're thinking, like, if you see teenage boys at the mall or at Walmart and they're picking up Old Spice, you're like, why don't you get Axe instead? Like, your attention goes to, like, well, what's happening with this? And if it goes up, you're going, ooh, all right, it went up. And if it goes down, you're going, I don't know why my heart feels weird. I don't know why I have this tightness in my chest. I don't know why today is a bad day. It's because this thing that you're paying attention to, it went down. There's a direct connection between our heart and our money. Now, here's the thing. That's not even a Christian thing. That's not a Bible thing. You might notice we haven't even opened the Bible yet. That's just a thing. That's a human being thing. Whether you're a Christian or not, whether you're a believer in Jesus or not, that's true, that there is a direct connection between your heart and your money. Now, because that's true, we shouldn't find it surprising that Jesus had something to say about this, that Jesus actually noticed this thing and that Jesus had something that he wanted to speak into it. So in Matthew chapter 6, verse 24, here's Jesus talking about money. He said this, "No one can serve two masters." Would you say master?
Master.
Yeah, no one can serve two masters. And you're thinking like, wait. We're Americans. We don't have any masters. I'm not serving nobody and no how and no what. And I don't know whatever the end of no is for you. I don't serve no one. I'm not serving any master. He says, no one can serve two masters. He says, either you will hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. And again, you're thinking, well, again, I don't have a master. I don't have a master. But again, what Jesus is about to tell us to pay attention to, he's saying, look, there's something that your heart gets tied to, and whatever your heart is tied to, that's your master. Whatever your heart is most connected to, that's your master. Whatever your heart, whatever you pay attention to and can't stop paying attention to and won't stop paying attention to, that's what's been your master. Whatever doesn't allow you to do what you want to do because you're in so much debt, that's your master. So no one can serve two masters. Either you'll hate the one and love the other, or you'll be devoted to the one and despise the other. So Jesus then ends off by saying this, and we would think, well, yeah, okay, well, we don't know what he's talking about yet. He hasn't mentioned anything specific. We'd think, okay, he's obviously talking about God and the devil, right? Because we would think, well, Jesus would care about the competition for our hearts. He would care about our devotion. He would care about our love. And he wants to make sure that we love God and that we don't love evil, that we love God and that we shun evil because we shun things. And we love God and we don't pay attention to evil. And we would think, well, so Jesus is going to say, you can't serve two masters. And the masters that we would choose from, it's either God or the devil. As if the devil would come up and be like, hey, Noah, guess what? I'm Satan, and I would like you to serve me instead of God, and be like, "Hi, I'm Satan," and be like, "Whoa, well, I choose you." You know, like that's not the choice. And interestingly enough, Jesus knew that wasn't the choice that we'd be faced with, right? He knew that our choice wasn't between God and the devil. So Jesus ends off this statement. He says, "No one can serve two masters," and then he goes on and says, "This you cannot serve both God and money." You can't serve God and money. Your heart can't be tied to God and be tied to money. Your heart can't be, you can't serve God and serve money. You can't love God and money. Jesus knew is simply this, that God's biggest competition for our heart would be money and materialism. Jesus knew that God's biggest competition for our heart, for my heart, for your heart, it would not be the devil, it would not be misuse of our time, that the biggest competition for my heart and for your heart, if you'd put that next slide up, would be money and materialism. It would be the things that we want, the things that we think will make us happy, the things that we seek after, the things that we save up for, the things that we're not willing to save up for, so we buy it now and we pay it off later, spending more than we actually need to spend on it. That Jesus knew our God's biggest competition for our heart would not be the devil, would not be misuse of time. It would be pursuit of money, and serving the things that we think will make us happy. It would be materialism. I mean, materialism, when you think, I mean, money, it's like, okay, I want money, so I can have stuff. Does that make sense? I want money so I can have things. I want money so I can afford the lifestyle I want. I want money so I can fill the closet with the type of clothes that I want. I want money so I can feel free to do whatever I want. I want money so I can get newer. I want money so I can get faster. I want money so I can afford this. I want money so I can upgrade our house. I want money so I can upgrade our phone. I want money so I can do this, and this. And what Jesus knew and what we all kind of know in our hearts is simply this: the materialism and the pursuit of money, it's a hunger, it's an appetite, but no appetite is ever fully and finally satisfied, right? And so when you get money, when you get the amount of money that you think you need to be happy, guess what you will find? That there's another amount of money that you think will make you happier. And when you get the newer, or you get the larger, or you get the faster, or you get the bigger house, you'll find that there's a bigger house yet. You'll find out that there's a newer car. Did you guys know that they come out with new cars every year? Did you guys know that? And so you can right now, you can buy a 2019, and guess what? In 2019, there will be a newer one. And what you thought would make you happy because it's brand new, all of a sudden the new one comes out and you go, but this isn't brand new anymore. And so we thought money would make us happy. We thought materialism would happy. We thought the car, we thought the house, we thought the dress, we thought the shoes, we thought the subscription to Birchbox would make us, I mean, we thought all kinds of things would make us happy. And then we found out, wait, this is just an appetite and it's never satisfied. But so we end up serving this and running after this and following after this and chasing after this. And what we find is like, wait, I've tied my heart to the wrong things. Jesus knew that the biggest competition for our hearts would be the stuff we chase after. It'd be the appetites we try to fill. It'd be the things that we try to fill and say, this will make me happy, this will satisfy me, when Jesus knew that only God could actually satisfy you. And so here's the thing, as we talk about this today, what Jesus knew is that either we will use one to get the other, and we will value one above the other. So we would either attempt to use God as a tool to get money, or we will use money as a tool to serve God. We will do one or the other. I mean, if you're a church person who loves money, it might be that you pray about money. You give because you know that there's like a blessing on the other side. You're like, I'm willing to part with it because I know God's going to give me more. I know God's going to give me more. I'm going to seek God because I think God is the way to actually have blessings in my financial life. That we will either use God as a tool to get money, or that we would use money as a way to serve God. That those are the paths that we would choose. So Jesus said, you cannot serve two masters. You will hate one and love the other. You'll be devoted to one and despise the other. No one can serve God and money. We will serve God or money. And so here's what this looks like, I think, to use kind of some imagery that we've used in this guardrail series. I think when we think of it, finances is kind of like a road. It's a highway with a steep and a dangerous ditch on each side of the road. And so if you'd put up that next slide, here's what this looks like. On the one side, we've got the ditch of consuming. Would you say consuming? And on the other side of the road, we've got the ditch of hoarding. Would you say hoarding? Now, when you hear the word hoarding when it comes to money, you think, well, no, I'm not a hoarder when it comes to money. Or you think, like, that would actually be the one way of hoarding that would be really cool. If you'd seen an episode of Hoarders and someone had, like, a whole bunch of 20s stacked in the back, you're like, that's the way you, like, if you're going to hoard something, hoard 20s, all right? Like, but you ever watch Hoarders and just go, like you want to take a shower? Like, that's the way I feel anytime I watch it. That has nothing to do with anything. Anyway, so here's what the ditch of consuming looks like. On the ditch of consuming, another word we could use there would be spending. that living on the side of consuming or spending means everything I get, I turn it into something for me. Sometimes they're really good things. Sometimes they're really wasteful things. Either way, whatever I get, I'm spending and I am consuming it. If it comes into my bank account, if it comes into my pocket, it's not going to stay there for long. I'm going to use it for something for me. The consuming mindset is the proverbial money burning a hole in our pockets. Now, let me ask you a question. Has anyone ever had money burning a hole in your pockets? Just raise your hand. Like, you couldn't spend it fast enough. The second it hit your account, it's like, sweet, it's payday, and so I'm going to go grocery shopping, and we're going to take ourselves out to dinner because we deserve a nice treat. You know, it's like, well, you treated yourself every day last week. Yeah, but we deserve a treat because it's payday, and we're going to fill up the car. And it's like, wait, we just got paid yesterday. How do we have no money in our account? Because it was consuming. Everything I get, if I get it and I get it, I spend it. I get it. When I get it, I can't spend it or consume things fast enough. And most of us, we don't think of it that way. We think of it as, well, this was necessary. Starbucks is necessary. Prime rib is necessary. You know, like this, it's all necessary. My Mountain Dew addiction, it's necessary. You know, like it's all consume. It goes out faster than it can come in. That's the consume side, okay? And you'd go, well, that seems like a bad idea. That is. That's why it's a ditch, okay? It's a ditch on one side of the road. The other side of the road is what we call hoarding, or if you wanted to put another nicer word in there, you could put the word saving. And you'd think, well, wait, how is that a bad thing? It's not necessarily a bad thing. But hoarding or saving, it's the opposite side of the road. It's the opposite ditch. Instead of money burning a hole in our pockets and we can't spend it fast enough, it doesn't make it to our pockets. It gets stuffed under an invisible mattress. You know what I'm talking about? Like, remember people used to do that, like stuff money under a mattress? It's like, it's safe here. It's like, well, what if your mattress catches on fire? Then I guess it's not safe, right? So it's the idea that we're going to stuff it away. We're going to save for a rainy day. It goes into saving accounts with the belief that we need to save, because there's never enough. And because there's never enough, we need to be prepared for the worst at all times and make sure that we never have to rely on anything or anyone. So we've got two ditches, and in the middle, we've got a very narrow lane. Does that make sense? Now, here's the thing. Again, you can look at those things and go, well, those are two incredibly different things. And I would argue that they actually have two really big things in common. The first one is simply this, that both of these ditches are pretty selfish. I mean, think of it. When we're consuming, I mean, we may be consuming for our family, but whose family are we consuming for? Our family. I'm consuming for my family. I'm consuming for things that I want. It's all about what I want, when I want it, and how I want it. So I'll spend everything I've got, and I'll usually spend something extra above and beyond what I've got to get exactly what I want. That's the consumer side. You think, okay, I understand how that could be selfish. How's the hoarder side selfish? Look, the hoarder side is selfish because you're not saving for someone else's needs. You're not providing for someone else's future. I mean, you may be, but it's in your family if you are. You're providing for your family, and you're providing for things that you care about the most. You're not saving because you care about the world. You're saving because you care about your world. Does that make sense? Both of these ditches, both sides of the road can be very, very selfish. The second thing, and I think the more important one, is this. Both of these ditches can easily end up living as if there is no God. I mean, if you're in the consumer thing, it's like, look, I don't need God to satisfy me. I'll satisfy myself by getting what I want, by buying what I want, by buying what I think I need. I don't need God to meet my needs. I'm going to meet my own needs. I've got enough money. I can do whatever I want. I can get whatever I want. I can spend as much as I want to meet my own needs. I don't need God to meet my needs. I'll meet my own needs. We can consume that way. As a hoarder, we can think of it this way. I'm going to save so that if I ever need saving, I can save myself. I don't need God to save me. I'll be my own savior. I don't need God to provide for me. I meet every need for today, and I save to provide for tomorrow's needs as well. I don't need God because I'm a saver. Now, here's the thing. Again, we look at this and we go, okay, so those are the ditches, and we're not supposed to end up in the ditches. How do we balance this out? Because there are things we have to spend on, obviously, and saving, it almost sounds, Chris, like you're saying that's a bad thing, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but what's the right way to do this? What's the way to stay in the straight and narrow when it comes to our finances? What's the right way and the right plan when it comes to our money? And so today, we're going to answer that question, but I want to give you a few guardrails. Again, we've talked about some matters of conscious, some things where we go, you know, if this is true, if this is kind of, you know, happening, we would go, before I go any further, I want to make sure I'm paying attention. So here's a couple guardrails when it comes to our finances. When it comes to our finances, your financial conscience should light up if you have no money and you don't know where it all went. I mean, that means there's no plan and I'm not paying attention. And you should at least have one of those things. You should either have a plan and then you don't have to pay attention, or you should not have a plan but pay great attention. It's great if you can do both, but if you have no money and you don't know where it went, it means you don't have a plan, you don't have a budget, you just get money and spend money and get money and spend money and get money and spend money, and it comes in, it goes out, and I have no idea where it went. I have nothing to show for it. I have no receipts. I have no, like, if you're married and this is the truth, this is why you have fights about money, because because it came in and it went out and you don't know where it is and you can't explain it. So if you have no money and you don't know where it all went, you need to pay attention to this area of finances. You need to think about this a little bit more. Your financial conscience should light up. There should be alarm bells going off. If it's happened a couple times in your marriage and you're the one who doesn't know where it went, you should pay attention to this. You need to wise up. You need to listen up. You need to pay attention. So if your financial conscience should light up if you have no money and you don't know where it all went. Secondly, your financial conscience should light up if you consistently spend more than you make on a monthly basis. That means you don't control you don't control what you make. I get that. Very few of us set our own salary. Like that's a reality. Very few of us set our own hourly wage or set our own schedule. You may not control what you make, but you do control what you spend. Does that make sense? And so if you're consistently spending more than you make, and you know, this is how much I make, this is how much we can afford to live on, this is how much we can actually afford for housing, this is how much we can afford for gas, this is how much we can afford for cars, but you consistently overextend yourself and overspend yourself, that's where you should start paying attention and go, hey, you know what? We need to actually think about this. We need to pay attention to this. We need to actually focus on this area and get this right. So if you consistently spend more than you make on a monthly basis, your financial conscience should light up if that's true of you. Next one is simply this. Your financial conscience should light up if an emergency automatically equals spending on a credit card because you have no savings. I mean, if there's something that happens and you're like, hey, this is going to be more expensive than we thought. It's a medical bill. It's a car repair. It's a home repair. Furnace went out. Air conditioning went out. If that happens and your default is, well, we just got to charge it because we've got to get the work done. We can't afford to drive. I mean, you can't afford to drive around New Mexico with no air conditioning in July, right? Like we get that. But if it automatically means card and we'll have to figure it out later, and now we're going to pay 22% or 24% interest on it for 5 months. I mean, I don't want to tell you how to do your money, but if that's the case, it means that we need to pay attention a little bit. It means that we should actually have some alarm bells going off. That can happen once, but we don't necessarily want it to happen twice. Does that make sense? And then finally, guardrails, your financial conscience should light up if it's been 6 months since you've given anything to anything or to anyone. I mean, we get it. But if you're thinking like, hey, like when it comes to my money, it's my money. And like when I see neighbor kids coming around the neighborhood and they've got the little chart out, and it's like, hey, would you like to buy a pastry braid? And you're like, no, I don't want to buy a pastry braid. I don't want to do that. I want to save my money for my things. And I know that's going to help the school, but I'm not up for that. Like if you're closing the shutters and locking the door and turning off the lights and trying to make it look like you're not home so that they don't even have the opportunity to ask, it might mean there's a thing where you have actually valued money too highly and are not willing to consider the idea of generosity. If you have to stretch really far to think or come up with something for how you have given something to someone in the last 6 months, if you're like, well, you know, I had all those clothes in the back of my closet that I hadn't worn in 14 years, and I finally got those and I took them to Goodwill. That's giving, right? I mean, we can count that, all right? But if you have to stretch really hard to come up with the idea of this was giving in some way. Again, I'm not here to tell you exactly how to live your life, but that should be a little bit of a warning signal. And here's the thing. If any of those are true of you today, or if any of those have been true about you, that doesn't make you a bad person. That makes you really human. And the other thing about that doesn't make you that makes you on par with your pastor, because every one of those things has been true about me at some point in my life. That doesn't make you bad. That doesn't make me judge you. That makes me go, hey, you're human. I'm human. We all have had times where we've gotten it a little bit backwards with money, or a little bit off with money, and we've gotten it a little bit sideways with money. We've got it a little bit thinking like it's just about me, and my. And here's the thing. This doesn't make you bad. But the other thing that I know is true is you don't want to live in these directions for too long. Does that make sense? You don't want to live in the direction of I'm never generous. You don't want to live in the direction of I never save. You don't want to live in the direction of I always overspend. You don't want to live in those directions too long, because there is a better way, and there's a way that God actually has for us to live when it comes to money. And so as we close up today, I want to talk about the way God has for us to live when it comes to money, and it revolves around three words. So the three words are give, save, live. Would you say give?
Give.
Say save.
Save.
Say live.
Live.
Let's try it again. Say give.
Give.
Say save. Say live.
Give.
Now let's put it all together. Say give, save, live.
Give, save, live.
Give, save, live. So here's the thing. You think like, wait. Save and live, like those are the things we already like you do anyway, and those are the opposite sides of the thing. So how are those what we're supposed to do? The order here is what is really important. The order here is how we establish proper guardrails when it comes to our finances. The order is the guardrail. So we give first, we save next, and we live on the rest. So we give first, we save next, we live on the rest. We give first, we save next, we live on the rest. Does it sound a little bit like a cheer? Like we give first, we save next, we live on the rest. We give first, we save next, we live on the rest. We give first, we save next, we live on
the rest.
The rest, yeah. And so here's the thing. I want to talk really quickly about why we do this in this order. We give first. In 2 Corinthians, Paul is writing this letter to the church in a city called Corinth. And we've read some things that Paul wrote to them within this series. But as he writes a second letter to this church to follow up on some of the things he wrote in the first letter. And there was a correspondence between them. And they're asking about, like, hey, we believe as Jesus followers, we believe we're supposed to be generous, but we want to know how to be generous. We want to know what we're supposed to do with our generosity. We want to know like what's the best way to invest in this. And so he comes to an explanation of this in 2 Corinthians in chapter 8 and chapter 9. And in chapter 8 in verse 4 and 5, he says this. He's talking about how a different church in a different city had come together to give. And he says this, they urgently pleaded with us for the privilege of sharing in this service to the Lord's people, which was an offering they were taking to the church in Jerusalem to provide for their needs. It says, and they exceeded our expectations. They gave themselves first. Would you say first? They gave themselves first of all to the Lord. First of all to the Lord, and then by the will of God also to us. In other words, the example that Paul points to is they gave first. They gave first. When it came to like what's Paul's ideal for generosity? It's first. That generosity is first. In 2 Corinthians 9, then he's kind of wrapping up this example. And he says this in verse 6. Remember this, whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Each of you should give what you have decided in your heart to give. So he says, you give first and you make a decision. You give first and you make a decision. What you've decided in your heart to give, not reluctantly or under compulsion. In other words, no one should be twisting your arm to get you to give. And hopefully that's not what you feel this is. That not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. And God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work. Here's Paul's, if I could summarize Paul's chapter 8 and chapter 9, here's what Paul is saying. When you give first, you prioritize the things of God in your life first. Does that make sense? When you give first, you prioritize, since my heart is connected to my money, if I give my money first, I'm putting the things of God first in my life. I'm prioritizing God over me. I'm prioritizing God over stuff. I'm prioritizing God over material things that will meet an appetite for today, but will find myself unsatisfied in the future. When I give first, I prioritize the things of God in my life, and I allow God room to be God in my life. Does that make sense? Yeah. Then when he says, look, that verse 8, it's not a throwaway verse. He says, God is able to bless you abundantly so that in all things, at all times, you will have all that you will need and you will abound in every good work. He says, look, I know you think when I give it away, I'll have less. And he says, no. When you give it away, God has more.
Yeah.
So we give first. Now, here's the thing. If you're not a believer in Jesus, you're not giving to a church, that's fine. I understand that. If I wasn't a follower of Jesus, I wouldn't give to a local church either. But this is still wise for you, because what this does is this says, look, my whole financial picture is not about me. I want to invest in something bigger than me. This breaks the power of materialism. This breaks the power of money. This allows us to know that there is something else that matters in life. So we give first. We save There you go. Okay, yeah. We give first, we save next. In Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6 and 6 through 8, it says this: take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Which, by the way, I read this week as I was preparing, and I decided anytime Noble wouldn't go where I wanted Noble to go, I'd just be like, come on, lazy bones, and she did not like that. Anyway, so it says, take a lesson from the ants, you lazy bones. Learn from their ways and become wise. Though they have no prince or no governor or ruler to make them work, in other words, no one's telling the ants what to do. Though they have no prince or governor or ruler to make them work, they labor hard all summer gathering, or another word to use would be storing, food for when?
Winter.
For the winter. In other words, they're working in the summer and they're setting some aside for the winter? Well, what's true in the winter? In the winter, there is no food to gather. So if the ant wants to eat when there is no food to gather, they have to gather something today and they have to save it or to store it. They gather, but they store. They gather and they store. They gather and they save some for later. In Proverbs chapter 21, verse 20, it says this: in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. He says, look, you want to know the difference between a wise and a foolish person when it comes to money? Solomon says, you know, one of the wisest people who has ever lived, he says, look, the fool says it's all about me and mine and me and mine and today and today and today, and I just want what I want. So I'm going to have whatever I want. I'm going to consume everything. I'm going to devour everything. He says, look, but the wise, they have stores. They're prepared for tomorrow, not just for today. So here's a couple things worth saving for. It's worth saving for emergencies. It's worth saving for future purchases, and it's worth saving for future hopes and dreams. I mean, like, when based on what I said earlier, you might think that I'm not a fan of savings. I'm a huge advocate of savings. I'm a big fan, though, of balance when it comes to our lives. So I believe in give first. I believe in save next. And so, like, I mean, just an example of this. When Jalen told me that we were pregnant, we were expecting Noble for the very first time, when she told me on a Friday night, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. And she put a little Packers onesie on my chest, and I was like, oh my gosh, this doesn't fit. This must be for a baby. And so it happened. She told me we were pregnant. And the very next thing I did is I grabbed my phone and I opened a savings account for our baby that was not yet to be born for 7 months. You might think that's ridiculous, but I opened a savings account. I started a weekly transfer of funds, just a little bit here and there, but every week, very intentional. And by the time Noble was born, there was $1,100 in that savings account. And by the time she turned one, there was $1,500 in that savings account. Now, you might think, like, well, what does a one-year-old need a $1,500 in their savings account for? Nothing. But based on what I know my teeth looked like at 12 and what I've heard Jalen's teeth looked like at 12, I know that at 12, Noble's going to need braces, right? And I also know that this is going to surprise a lot of people. I've heard college keeps getting more expensive. Is that true? So I've heard college keeps getting more and more expensive, and I don't want to wait till I'm scared when she's 16 to start saving for college when she's 18. I don't want to wait till it's too late. I want to start now. That's a future thing. That's a future thing. That's a future thing. This year in our house with our vehicles, we've had to replace all four tires on both of our vehicles, which I know it sounds fun. It's not. But so that means this year we've spent over $900 on tires, which is so exciting and so fun. And for most families, that would be like, hey, that's an emergency, that's an emergency, that's an emergency. But what I knew in 2017 was that, hey, I know we're sitting on about 4.5-year-old tires on both of our vehicles. I know next year we're going to need to replace all tires on both of our vehicles at some point. So I started setting money aside, and we didn't have to take anything out. Like, we didn't have to put it on a credit card. It was we saved up little by little. We give first, we save next, and we save for emergencies, we save for future purchases, and we save for the future, for our future hopes and dreams. So we give first, we save next, and we live on the rest. That's your housing budget, your food budget, your grocery budget, your car and gas budget. It comes out of what's left. That we give first, we save next, and it forces you and it forces me to exercise restraint. It forces me to live inside of current reality. It forces me to live within my means. And that's what it has the power of doing for you to for you as well. So we give first, we save next, we live on the rest. Now, if you're thinking like, well, what's that? What does that look like? I mean, this acknowledges that, look, there's a God who's worth my devotion. There's a future that's worth my attention. And there's a today that I want to enjoy, but I want to enjoy within my means. And so here's what this looks like. I'm a big fan of thinking in terms of percentages in this stuff. When it comes to finance, I think it's a good idea to think in terms of percentages. A lot of people in church history have thought of the idea of 10, 10, 80. We give 10%. That's in the Old Testament. It's called the tithe. In the New Testament, Jesus actually reiterated this called the tithe. Giving 10% is called the tithe. And a lot of people said, like, well, it's wise to also, if you're going to give to God, you also give to the future 10%. So you give 10, you save 10%, and then you live on 80%. For some of you, you might think like, hey, with the amount of debt that I have, with student loans that I have, that's unrealistic. And I would say, hey, for some of you, that is unrealistic. But there's still a place to start, right? And so it might be that you start at 5% and 5% and 90%. It might be that you start at 1 and 1 and 98. It might be that you start at 2 and 2 and 96. It might be that you've been blessed and there's a lot of things that have happened in your life. And it might be that 10 and 10, 80 doesn't really make you feel anything anymore. It might be that the tithe is no longer generous to you. You're just like, well, it just happens. Don't even think of that at all. It might be that it's time for you to actually move those numbers up a little bit. And for us, about 4 years ago, Jalen and I, we started marriage together at 10, 10, 80. And 2 years into marriage, we thought, you know what? We don't even notice that. Like it doesn't affect us at all. And so we moved to 15, 15, and 70. And so we live on 70% of our income, we save 15%, and we give 15% to the church and to missions. I don't know where you are, and I don't know what your financial picture looks like, but I just want to encourage you. If you don't have a plan when it comes to this, I think it's time to come up with a plan. I think it's time to set some percentages. I think it's time to set either a 5, 90 or a 10, 10, 80. But figure out what it looks like for you to give first, to save next, and then to live on the rest. Because this is how we honor God with our finances. This is how we don't end up in either ditch. This is how we stay on the road. Does that make sense? And this is important for us as individuals to get right. This is also important for us as a church. I mean, when you think about this, what the church, there's no one, we're a three-year-old church. There's no one that died and left us money. There's not like some foundation that's like, well, we got, $1 million in the bank and we're living off of that. We rely every single week on the generosity of this church. And I just want to kind of paint a little bit of a picture. Like, just think, what's possible? I mean, we've seen amazing things happen in 3 years, starting from bare bones and starting from we were talking about it last night with some people. When we first started, I mean, we had heard of a church that like their first offering, they said, we're going to give away half of it to missions. And their first offering was $10,000. And so they gave away $5,000 in missions on their first Sunday. And we thought, we're going to do that too. It's going to be amazing. And our first offering was $211. And I remember thinking, oh crap. It's okay to say that word in church. It's all right. So I remember thinking like, oh man, this is gonna be difficult. And I remember from those days seeing to these days where we've seen people become generous and we've seen people become generous with God with their finances. And to see that we are currently now a self-sustaining church in year three, that's a big deal. And so I don't talk about this because I think like, oh well, we need money, we need people to start giving, otherwise we're gonna fall apart. That's not where we're at. But when I talk about this, here's what I want us to make sure we understand. Think of what can happen as we keep moving forward if everyone gets on board with this. Think of the ministries that we can launch. Think of the missionaries that we can support. Think of the ministry to people who are really hurting. Think of the ministry that we can do to people who are really hungry for food and for God. Think of what we can do if instead of having to do portable setup and take down every single Sunday, if we actually can start to think of a building someday for us. Again, a building's not the point, but a building's a great tool for a church to have. So this is a big deal for us to get right as individuals. This is a big deal for us to get right as a church. And I want to make sure that as a church, we are wise with our finances. I want to make sure that as people, we're wise with our finances. So let's make a decision today that we're going to give first, we're going to save next, we're going to live on the rest, because we want to use money to serve God. We don't want to use God to serve money on our behalf. We know money doesn't ultimately satisfy. We know materialism doesn't ultimately satisfy. We know God satisfies. And so we want to serve God with our money. Let's pray.